Listen, we've all been told to follow the beaten path, but what happens when that path just doesn't work out for you?
For me, that was following that path led to a mere 25-cent raise. So in this episode, we're sharing why we chose to go on our own unconventional path, the choices that helped us build a successful cash-based PT clinic, and how you can navigate your career path to make more money, attract the clients that you want, and not get trapped in a position that just doesn't fulfill you.
All right, so for me, the first pivotal moment in my career was actually before I started my career. When I started going to college, a community college, right after I got out of the Marine Corps, the professor had us go shadow somebody that in the field we wanted to be in and interview them. And that moment for me was pivotal because I was actually going to go to school to be a PTA and then work as a PTA while I went back to school to be a PT, which would have been a really roundabout way to get there. And I'm sure plenty of ways for me to fall off that path along the way. And the PT that I shadowed and interviewed was like, nope, that's dumb. You should just go right to PT school. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. So that was the first thing that really shaped my career and actually got me into the PT field instead of being a PTA, which I guess is in the same field, but different role.
Yeah, for me, that first pivotal moment was, so I was in my first job in outpatient orthopedics. It was a hospital-based system. So you see a lot of everything, like total hips, total knees, falls, balance, post-stroke, all in this orthopedic clinic. And so I had gotten out of school. I wanted to work with active adults in the athletic population. And I was slowly becoming the neuro person in my clinic. And what that means is I wasn't going out and getting continued education or specializing in neuro. That was just who was getting put on my clinic. And then the management was like, oh, you're really good at doing this. Caitlin's our neuro person. And I was like, what? not what I wanted. So I had a discussion with management to see if it was possible to put me with more active adults, which it wasn't because they just put people on your schedule. But we talked about this idea of starting a sports service line. And so I was working off the clock for hours before and after work. I would go and shadow at a high school with the athletic trainers when students would come in before they went into school. And then I would go to games and be on the field with the athletic trainers, the physicians and surgeons who were out there doing the coverage. Yeah, on my own time, unpaid. So I did this because I was like, this is great. I'm gonna form all these relationships. We're gonna get this sports service line going because they had really hyped me up at work. And it never took off because nobody let me know. And I had no idea that all of these high schools already had contracts with local facilities for physical therapy. So that never took off and I was just spinning my wheels. And that was a pivotal moment because I went out, I tried, I did something, and I was misled by my employer.
But they knew, right, too, before they sent you out there, that all those places that you went already had those contracts.
Yeah.
That's messed up. Yeah, so the second thing for me, I guess, that would be super pivotal in my career was very early on making the decision to get a ton of mentorship. My very first evaluation, I went into my boss's office. Shout out Tina, and I was like, hey T, I have a shoulder eval, what do I do? And she was like, oh, you just look at this, and this. And I wasn't in a private room, it was just like a curtain, right? So I went in there and I was like, hey, what's up, I'm Doc Raj, and we're checking your shoulder. And I looked at this, and I was like, I'll be right back. And I was like, hey T, I did that, what do I do next? And she was like, all right, look at this. And that's how I walked myself through that evaluation. I was literally like, oh, all right, did those things. What's next, T? All right, did those things, went back to her office. And she probably thought I was an idiot. But that's a loss a lot of people are. It was, you know, really kind of at that moment where I was like, I'm going to become a really good clinician because I don't like the way this feels. And that's where I decided that I'm going to get into all of the continuing education that I've done that has significantly shaped me as a clinician in my career and even what we're doing now. I feel like there's so many people that have that same like self-doubt that just like no one's gonna do that, right? Like not everybody's gonna go to their boss and be like, I have no idea what I'm doing right now, because it's probably pretty frowned upon by most places. But yeah, that was a pivotal moment for me.
Yeah, I think another one that I can think of is, so after that whole first year of trying to build the sports service line, working off the clock, I was doing a lot for my clinic and doing my very best. I just wanted to be a good PT. I got a 25-cent raise at my annual review, and that hit me hard. I was shocked because I already came out of school making way less than what I thought I would make. So I said, okay, and I started looking for other jobs. So I went to a bunch of interviews. I even got a job offer, and the salary was higher. But when I looked at the different variables, all the jobs were the same. You know, you see the patients that you don't want to see. You're seeing a million people a day. The techs are more in charge of doing the exercises than you are. And to get someone through rehab and get them actually doing the thing, that wasn't the position that I wanted. And so I talked to my boss about it, and he was like, you know, I can't do much, but what you can do, because he had my back at the time, and he was like telling me, okay, well, why don't you show this company the offer letter that they gave you, and maybe they'll give you a raise. And so I went through that process, but ultimately I ended up leaving. It was one of those nights where I couldn't sleep. I hated my job. I resented PT. I was like, this career field sucks. It isn't what, it's not what I thought it was going to be. And I came across Danny Mate's book called Fuck Insurance. And I was like, that's attention grabbing. Went through that, and I ended up quitting my job and starting a cash PT practice. And so that was a very pivotal series of events that led to me going the cash PT route and basically leaving the traditional industry.
Yeah, that's funny. I have almost a similar story to that. Mine, well, I'll kind of go backwards, is when the next moment was when I woke up and thought to myself, I don't want to do this anymore. I was living in my parents' unfinished basement in a ghetto room that I built by myself, and I'm not super handy. I mean, I built it. It was nice. They had walls. I just never, like, painted them. So it was just drywall. Either way, sidebar. I woke up in my parents' basement, and I was like, fuck, I don't want to do this anymore. And I had to have a conversation with myself. Like, hold on. What is it that you don't want to do anymore? Like, you don't want to help people? And I thought, man, that's not it. Like, what is it that you don't want to do? And I thought, it's the system. It's the way that things are going. That I'm getting overloaded with patients, seeing 4 patients an hour, and they're expecting a 30% cancellation rate. So they're booking with the expectation that people are going to cancel down to 4 patients an hour, and having friends and family come and see me, and them getting lost in the system as well, and then also getting, you know, a surprise bill in the mail 2 months later, 3 months later, 6 months later for thousands of dollars, and calling me up and be like, Roger, what the fuck is this about? I'm like, dude, I don't know. I don't have anything to do with that. That was a really big defining moment when I woke up. But like, well, actually, that was the moment where I decided to open a cash practice. I looked up how to write a letter of resignation on my way to work. You guys shouldn't be on your phone and drive, but I was. And then I got to work, and I just put in I put in my 3-week notice right then and there. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to fucking figure out how to open a business. But leading up to that, I also had a student that kept telling me, you should open a cash practice. You should open a cash practice. And he gave me Danny's book as well. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to do it. And then that same person, after I left, well, let me connect the dots to your story as well. I also threatened to leave and ask for a raise because I was making shit money. And I didn't actually apply to other jobs, but I told them I did. And I told them that I had offers. And I was trying to get them to give me a $20,000 raise. And they ended up giving me a $10,000 raise, which is cool. But then when I left, I helped that same student get a job there making $20,000 more than they were paying me after the raise. I'm like, wow, this is bullshit. And he was fresh out of school, and I had done the residency. I just completed 2 fellowships, and I was the only one in the clinic like crushing volume. I was the one keeping the whole clinic running at that time. And I never got a bonus, anything, because the company would have to hit its metrics, and then the region would have to hit its metrics, and then the clinic would have to hit its metrics, and then each therapist would have to hit its metrics. And then if anything along that chain got fucked up, you didn't get your bonus. So even though I was absolutely crushing it, and I was probably one of the most productive therapists in the company, I never saw a cent for a bonus the entire time I was working there.
Yeah, I think that setup, especially for the bonuses, is how a lot of employers in that traditional setting make it seem appealing, but then when you actually get in, you realize that nobody really gets the bonuses. So why don't we talk about maybe some of the challenges that PTs face in the industry and some solutions? So one of the major challenges in the industry, very similar to my experience, is you're not seeing the population that you want. So here's my insight on how you can address that. Number one, before you even get the job, you want to shadow and make sure the clinic even has your ideal clients or your population. Because if they're not seeing any or very little of the people that you want to see, you probably aren't going to enjoy working there. You know, you're going to end up like me, being the neuro person when I wanted to be at a sports clinic. If they do have the clientele that you want and the population that you want to see, make sure that you speak up in the interview process. Make sure that they're willing to put those people on your schedule. So you have an employer who's agreeing to do something for you, and that's something that you can hold them to in the process. So then when you're working in the clinic, if the population starts to change and you get less and less and less of what you wanted to see, speak up. If the employer isn't doing what they say they're gonna do, honestly, I'd just get a different employer.
Yeah, I mean, get things in writing too, yeah. Right? Like whatever they say, like don't ever take anybody's word for it at the interview, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then another challenge is your salary. You're being underpaid and you're just letting it happen. And that's a big thing, is like, especially with new grads, they're going out there and they're just getting a job offer and like, what kind of want to work here? And you want to pay me 60 grand? Okay, it's not what I want, but I guess I'll take it. Like you have to say no, you have to negotiate. You have to go in there and have like a, be prepared with knowing what other new grads in the area are getting paid at different companies and come in armed with that information. So that way there you can have an informed negotiation versus just randomly saying, well, I want to make 80 grand because that's what my teachers told me I should be making, or I know somebody that's making this. You can go in there and they're like, we're going to pay you 60. You say, well, I was really hoping to be on par with you know, the local average. This company, this company, this company, this company, all of these companies on average are paying new grads this dollar amount.
And I think denoting new grad or whatever level of experience or years of experience that you have is important, because you're not going to make what somebody who's been working for 10 years is going to make.
Yeah. With that being said as well, like, make sure no matter where you are in your career, you know the average salary for somebody with that many years of experience with your expertise, your certifications, all of these things. Most places don't pay you for having more letters after your name, but there are some that do. So if you are in an area where you have clinics that do that, make sure you go armed with that information and say, hey, I know that I would get paid this much at these places. Have multiple interview processes going on at the same time and don't accept any one at the same time. And then you can say, well, this place offered me this much and it's significantly more than what you're offering. And go back and forth with them. Play the game. It's a negotiation for real. If you don't ask, the answer is always going to be no. And then on top of that, people tend to get really comfortable in their jobs, like in the role that they're in when they've stayed there for a couple of years. And it's even if they don't like it, they just get comfortable, and the devil you know becomes better than the devil you don't. People just kind of go to work and slowly die and suffer. But if you switch jobs every couple of years, like if you aren't at somewhere that like you are really invested in their mission and helping them grow, like and they're helping you grow as a human, change jobs every couple of years where you get a higher starting salary. You're gonna be able to get a new job making more than you would if you stayed in your same job and just getting your annual 3-5% raise year over year. You can get another job where you're starting $20,000 higher somewhere. Compare that to how long it would take you to get there with a maybe 3-5% raise year over year over year. So that's another great way to kind of strategically navigate that.
A lot of people are very, very uncomfortable with direct conversations like that, especially when they're interviewing for a job, just because they want to be the right fit. They don't want to create too much turbulence in the waters. But learn to be direct early. It's really important that you stand up for yourself and that you know your value and your worth when you're going into these interviews. And you have to show it. You have to convey confidence, because they're also looking for you to convey confidence in the clinic when you're working with patients.
Here's maybe a different frame of thinking about the interview process, is that you're selling yourself, right? Like people think of it that way. They're buying you. You're agreeing to what your dollar amount as a human and your skill set is worth. And if you're not going to stick up for yourself there, like, nobody else is going to do it for you. But if you think, man, they think I'm only worth $60,000, you can say no. Whoever needs the situation the least is going to be the one that wins. If you're willing to walk away, if we're not getting what you want, they're going to be willing, a lot more willing to bend if they really want you, if they really need you,
yeah.
Or either one of those things.
But also just keep in mind, be realistic and look at the numbers of what people are making in the area.
I want $300,000 in 17,
or I'm walking.
17 weeks of vacation.
Yeah.
Be reasonable. Yeah. Be armed. Yeah.
So another challenge is limited exposure to career growth options. So this is so saying that you believe in the company, you love their mission, they're helping you grow as a human, but they're just aren't many career growth options available. Usually in PT clinics, you're either a PT or there's an opportunity to become a clinic director, right? So do your homework before you even get out in the field. Look on social media, look on the internet. Figure out your life goals, 5, 10, 15 years as a PT. What do you want to be doing? What does your life look like? What does your day-to-day life look like? Is it treating patients all day? Is it doing more of the back end stuff? Is it posting on social media to help more people learn how to be better with exercise? There's so many different roles that you could do with your PT hat on, and maybe they're not conventional. I certainly know what Roger and I do isn't conventional. And when I went to PT school, I envisioned myself in this clinic, but my dream job was, I was like, I want to be posting on social media and I want to be helping a lot of people and changing their lives. And then when I got in the clinic, it was nothing like what I knew I wanted in my heart. And so now the position that I'm in, this fulfills me. So focus on your fulfillment and work backwards from there to fit the vision that you want. If you can't find what you want, you're gonna have to make it. And maybe that means opening your own clinic.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point too. That starts off with knowing what you want. There's so many people that are just coasting through life in general with no life goals. If you don't know what you want out of life, sit down and figure it the fuck out. How do you know you have direction? Like, if you don't have goals set for your life, how do you know where you're going? You're just coasting, and none of this really matters to you at all. You're probably not listening anymore. Another challenge is going to be mentorship. Actually, real quick, pause before we get into that. If you guys aren't subscribed to us here on YouTube, take a second, hit that little subscribe button, and share this as well. Like, however you heard about this podcast, maybe it was on social media, Instagram, screenshot, someone tagging it. Like, do that same thing, pay it forward so we can help more people. All right, back to mentorship. That's a big challenge, is mentorship. More and more people that I talk to are like, I was promised mentorship, and then I didn't get it. Promised that I would have weekly mentorship and time set aside, and that lasted for a month or a couple of months. And then my schedule just kind of slowly got busier and busier, and then it fell off. Or there was nothing structured, and it was just like, if I had questions, I had a person to go to ask questions, but they were always busy anyways, and I just kind of figured it out. So it's your responsibility to get the mentorship. Even if they promise you mentorship and they're not giving it to you, it's your responsibility to speak up about it and make sure that you get it. So then, you know, when you're getting a new job, when you're going through the application process, there's a couple of different ways that you can go about it. One of them is to negotiate mentorship time into your agreement. However, I would highly recommend against that, unless you know that they have some type of structured mentorship program that you're interested in with a teacher that you like and want to learn from that has the qualifications that you want to work towards. And you need all of those, because otherwise you can just get mentorship time or get thrown into a mentorship program that actually isn't useful, that isn't what you like and isn't helpful to you at all, or you get stuck with a teacher or a mentor that you don't get along with, you don't learn well from, and they don't actually teach you. Like, I've been in situations where I've asked somebody, hey, why are you doing that? And they're like, well, just because this is how we do it. Like, that's not fucking mentorship. That's dogma. That doesn't teach you anything. You need to have the whys behind it. So generally speaking, I would advise against negotiating mentorship time into your agreement. And instead, I would negotiate a very healthy Con Ed stipend, right, into your benefits, where you can get a couple or a few thousand dollars a year to spend as you please. So you can go and find these things that you really want to learn about. If you want really good mentorship, like, just find the thing that you want to learn, the place that you want to go. And even if it's outside of your Con Ed stipend, ask for them to pay for it. Make a case about it. Like, go in prepared. Say, hey, I'd like to make this request. You might have to pay for it up front and then have them reimburse you on the back end. That's totally fine. But again, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. So if you find a program that you want to do, a certification that you want to get into, if you know you have a $1,500 Con Ed stipend and it's $3,000, like, ask. The worst thing they can do is say no. But if you don't ask, the answer is always no.
And if you haven't already, we have a free 3-week mini course available that's going to kickstart your mentorship and continuing education. All you have to do is click the link in the description box, and you get 3 weeks of free continuing education from the Performance Rehab Authority.
Yeah, we've got just under 1,000 people signed up for that right now. We've gotten really good feedback from it. So it'd be awesome if you guys get through it. After you get through just week one, even send us a message. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, apply it to your caseload. And remember, if you are unhappy or unfulfilled in your life or your career, it is up to you and no one is going to save you. It's your responsibility to lead by example, to pursue excellence and to learn new skills.
And to welcome the challenge of raising the bar. Drive the change that you want to see.